The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Okay, tov, chodesh tov. That chat with Amnesty International promises to be very interesting indeed, and I hope that people will write in with their questions. I think there's a lot to ask, so I'm going to just park that subject right there. It's still very much in the news. I'm not going to be talking about it right now. I definitely couldn't do better than a direct interview, face-to-face talk with the people who produced that report. But just on a completely different subject, there has been a report of a possible oil leak, oil spill off the coast of Netanya this morning. There are reports of an oil spill something like 20 kilometers off the coast of Netanya. No reports about where this would have come from, what caused the spill, what the severity is. Comes only a year after Israel suffered one of its worst disasters, environmental disasters, with a massive oil spill that covered a lot of the Mediterranean last year. Let's hope that this one will be a little more manageable. There have been quite stormy seas, so perhaps that's all linked, but that's the latest. And of course, still lots and lots of stories about the death of Esther Pollard. We mentioned it just during the course of the broadcast on Sunday when we heard that she had passed away. Jonathan Pollard, of course, saying that he respected and appreciated the fact that she'd really dedicated much of her life to fighting for his freedom, and feared that that may well have taken a toll on her health.
Yeah, it's such a sad story and such a sad way to end. They really have not had an easy, they didn't have an easy life as a couple.
No, they certainly didn't. And it was interesting just, you know, how their lives together worked out. It's interesting that they actually met as teenagers on a trip to Israel together. He from America, she from Canada. And that's where they originally met, went back to their lives and, you know, went on and did other things. And then came together again against the backdrop of his arrest and imprisonment for spying. A fascinating story indeed. And in fact, before even we'd heard about her death, there were reports that some more information would be made public in a TV show on Israeli TV. We will be watching out for that very eagerly indeed.
Absolutely. Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has announced that Israel's laser defense system will be ready for deployment in a year from now. What precipitated this announcement?
Good question. I'm sort of trying to work it out. I mean, there have been talks about a laser defense system along the borders with Israel, along Israel's borders, already for some time. Probably 10 years, I'm guessing. Ever since the Iron Dome became a real thing, and ever since there was a discovery that short-range missiles that popped over the border unfortunately couldn't be detected by the Iron Dome, and therefore there was a certain hole in Israel's multi-layered defense system in terms of these very, very short-range missiles that unfortunately we had to learn through bitter experience when some of them were used against soldiers who had gathered on the Israeli side of the Gaza border, and they were hit by some short-range missiles. People were killed in that particular way. So Israel has been developing this laser wall system already for some time. It's interesting that the Prime Minister decided yesterday, when he made a speech at the Institute for National Security Studies in Tel Aviv, to announce that Israel was a year away from deploying this, first experimentally and later operationally. He even gave information that we would start in the south. He gave the paradigm, saying that it didn't make sense that Hamas could make a rocket for a few hundred dollars and then cause the Iron Dome battery to have to shoot it down, with each missile from the Iron Dome costing tens of thousands of dollars. There was some sort of a lack of consistency, and that particular paradigm for Israel didn't really work. And he didn't mention so much the hole that had originally been detected with these short-range missiles, but he was more talking about the fact that financially this didn't seem a sustainable equilibrium to be able to continue, and we needed to find a cheaper way to be able to shoot those missiles down, so that things that cost a few hundred dollars to make doesn't cost Israel tens of thousands of dollars in order to shoot down. But this I don't know why he's decided to announce now, a year away from the deployment, that we will be ready in a year to deploy this. It almost feels like he's inviting Hamas to launch an operation in the next year before we're ready to deploy this. And it seems a little strange. On the other hand, it does show, you know, the immense development that's gone on in Israel in order to try and close this particular gap and to rejig the paradigm that we were suffering with up until now about that cost imbalance. So overall, I think this is a good thing, but it just makes me wonder why we're showing ourselves, at least for now, to be susceptible, to be open until such time that that laser becomes deployed along the borders. I just wonder whether we won't be deploying it slightly earlier in order just to try to close this particular gap down. But it was interesting from both perspectives. And just in a related story, there was this very fascinating story about a US general who had been present when Israel conducted a drill simulating an attack on Iran. And apparently this was a very extensive Air Force drill that took place a few weeks ago that involved in-flight refueling and included hitting long-range targets and dealing with surface-to-air missiles that potentially could be part of a scenario that an attack on Iran could precipitate. And for the first time, a U.S. officer had been invited into some of the holiest of areas, the most off-public grounds areas, to witness this particular exercise. One wonders whether it was something of an attempt to influence the U.S. in their discussions with Iran in those Vienna-based talks on the nuclear program. And this particular air drill comes on the back of another sea drill that Israel will join in the Red Sea alongside the navies of a number of other countries, and a number of Israeli naval craft will be involved in that sea drill in the Red Sea. And so it's very interesting that the Israeli military is becoming much more involved with joint operations, joint drills, joint training exercises with other neighboring countries. And when Naftali Bennett yesterday spoke about the new laser system, it was all about Iran. This is all to protect not only Israel against what he describes as the octopus that is Iran, which has its tentacles reaching out in all different directions. But I think he sees the possibility that this laser system will be deployed in other countries, neighboring countries around the Middle East, where Iran presents a threat to them as well through proxy armies, to try to try to protect them. And in so doing, as he calls it, try to somehow prevent the tentacles of the octopus from reaching out to try to dry that all up, sanction Iran in all different ways in order to weaken it as much as possible.
Absolutely fascinating. Israel's consumer goods providers have backed down from price increases after government intervention. How did the government intervene?
Well, so this is a very fascinating story because we've experienced a huge inflation, relatively speaking. The inflation rate over the last couple of months has been the highest that Israel experienced probably in the last 10 years, with prices going up, gas, electricity, food prices, petrol prices, across the board, people complaining about the prices going up. We are being told by the importers and by the consumer price, the consumer goods companies, that these price increases are precipitated by supply chain issues, by increases in packaging, increases in transport costs, and the like. So it's very interesting for me that Minister of Finance Avigdor Lieberman decided to personally intervene with the help of some other organizations, including Israel's main labor union, which was protesting against these massive price increases and the inflationary impact that it's had on the Israeli economy. The Minister of Finance decided to write to some of Israel's main consumer goods companies, the importers, those who are producing food and consumer goods to the Israeli market. He wrote to them and he asked them to reverse their price increases. But he didn't quite leave it at that. He then did a little bit of an investigation into their financial situation, looked at their financial statements. Many of them are public companies, and these financial statements are public documents that can be examined, looked at dividends that have been declared to shareholders in recent times, looked at profitability and cash flow, and then really came at them with an attack saying, it looks to us as if though your profitability hasn't suffered over the last couple of years, that your dividends haven't suffered at all. In fact, in some cases, the dividends have increased, the distribution to shareholders as a result of profits generated by the company. So the record shows that these price increases are not justified at all, and therefore not necessarily that we're asking you politely to reverse the price increases, but we're really coming at you with some ammunition in order to justify why we think you shouldn't be putting your prices up and why we think you're just jumping on the bandwagon to take advantage of an opportunity.
Absolutely.
Now, there is a double-edged sword involved in this situation, because those companies, and there were a few of them, that immediately reversed their price increases are shown to be predatory. They effectively are admitting that they have been predatory in their pricing and had no excuse, had nothing to say other than just to simply reverse the price increases that they'd implemented. So that was the one side of the one edge of the sword. On the other edge, we have a company like Osem, who said, we are not going to be bullied into reducing our prices or reversing the price increases, because we feel that they're justified. They have a basis. There is a reason why we've done it. We haven't just done it on the whim in order to take advantage of people, but there is a basis for us doing it, and they have dug their heels in. Now, by digging their heels in, they really attracted the attention of the Israeli public, of the labor unions, and incurred the wrath of the general public with protests springing up all over the place and people using social media to compare prices of Osem pasta with prices of other supermarket pasta, which is for all intents and purposes pretty much the same product. And Osem has really been shown up in a bad light. Interestingly, they've also now decided to back down, and they have said not that they are reversing their price increases, but they are simply delaying them for a few months in order to do some further investigation into the matter, and there to come to some sort of a conclusion once they have done that about whether these price increases might be justified or not. It sounds to me like they are not going to increase their prices in the end, but it's just a more elegant way of climbing down from this very, very tall tree that they've climbed up. But a very fascinating intervention for me, and not one which we take for granted, where the government is actually climbing in and taking the social view against independent companies.
It really is so fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, it's not something that you take for granted, is it?
No, and it's certainly not something you see every day, where government gets involved in price increases to protect the citizens. It's very telling, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
I think it's going to be very fascinating to see how it plays out. In particular, I think it's going to be fascinating to see what impact it might have on the cost price index, the inflation measure that we have, because unfortunately, over the last few months, that has really gone up substantially. The CPI for 2021 turned out to be 2.8%, which was substantially higher than we've had in any of the recent years. It doesn't sound like a very high number to people who live in higher inflation environments, and I get that. But we in Israel have become very accustomed to very low inflation environment, and 2.8% for us is a big deal.
Just too high. The Green Pass system in Israel will be scaled back. That's starting from next week. That must be a relief for people. What's caused this change?
Well, I think that we are just seeing that we're coming off the peak of the number of people who are being diagnosed with Omicron. We're now rolling out the fourth booster vaccine to all people over 50, whereas before it had been available only to medical workers and over 60s. That is now slowly but surely being expanded. I've had my fourth booster vaccination already, so I'm already revealing that I'm a person of a certain age, if anybody didn't already know that. And also lots of different adjustments to the restrictions that are in place surrounding the virus in general. So what they've decided in terms of the green pass system, which currently applies to all restaurants and places of entertainment and gyms, that people who attend there are expected to present a valid green pass. And now that valid green pass will only be required for certain higher risk events, so certain larger events that the government is yet to specify. But for example, it won't apply just generically across the board to every restaurant and every gym and every coffee shop in the way that it applies at the moment. That will all be reduced. And in particular, the government has said that they will actually subsidize events that are held, which will set up antigen testing stations at the event to allow people to attend more safely, that the government will actually give subsidies to those events who choose to do that. And there's also been quite a lot of discussion about people who are symptomatic and asymptomatic and whether PCR tests are required or not required, whereas the PCR testing system had almost collapsed due to the number of people who were requiring it, and then PCR tests were only available to over 60s or high-risk people. Now that's been reduced again. So PCR testing is more of a thing again. I think it's now available to over 30s. Anybody who wants a PCR test can go and do so. So they're kind of back to coping with the demand. Mm. All of this indicates that we're coming off the peak, but still, unfortunately, our hospitals remain pretty full with people who've suffered more serious illnesses. When we look at the numbers, it's clear that there have been so many people who are infected. I mean, the numbers have been so massive, and even the recorded numbers are nothing near the reality of what's gone down, because so many people go under the radar, unrecorded. But when we look at, you know, even though the hospitals are full with the number of serious cases, when we look at those as a proportion of the overall number of people who are diagnosed, I think everything seems to be a lot lower during the Omicron wave that we've had. Doesn't seem to have been quite as serious in other places. I think that amongst countries around the world, Israel's been the one that suffered more dramatically from Omicron, ironically, and I'm not sure why that is. I think it would be interesting to understand what exactly caused that, but I think we're pretty much getting over it, and restrictions are due to be relaxed over the next few weeks.
Anthony Rock, thank you. As always, it is 8 o'clock. We'll catch you tomorrow morning at 7:45 for the Israel Report.